It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Hello and welcome to the RTC Weekly Podcast. We continue this week with exhibiting some of the new programming on the Radio Theater Channel. That's the parent channel that streams old-time radio 24/7, 365. We're going to start off with an hour of soap time, and that, as the name suggests, is soap operas, so you'll get a flavor of that. And then we'll go down and hear the FBI. Stay tuned.
It's early evening, immediately after the close of our last episode. As in the nightclub managed by Gordy Webber, the nightclub that is secret headquarters for JT's crime syndicate, and where, for Perry Mason's special benefit, August Jansen is posing as manager, Kate Beekman looks from Della Street to Perry Mason, says,
I'm glad you understand now, Mr. Mason. You do understand, don't you?
It was carefully explained, Mr. What's the manager's name?
Mr. Jansen. He's awfully nice. Don't you think he's nice?
Well, on such short acquaintance, it's hard to say, Kate.
What's wrong, Katie?
Wrong? Nothing.
Kate, when you saw Della and me, you were nervous. So nervous, you dropped a cup of coffee.
What's wrong, honey?
Nothing. I told you there's nothing. What makes you think there's something wrong? I was surprised when I saw you. That's why I dropped the coffee.
Kate.
You've seen the place and met the manager and... Oh, gee, Mr. Mason, what could be wrong? Don't you think I can take care of myself? I'm not a child.
No, Kate, you're not a child.
I should think you'd have something more important to think about than trying to find something wrong.
Yes,
when...
frankly, I do.
What?
I do have something important to do. Something involving the lives of many people. I can't give you details. But part of it I'll take time to tell you, if you will take time to listen.
Why, of course.
Good. Kate, somewhere there's a lovely girl.
Somewhere?
Somewhere. She ran away, disappeared. She left a nice home and a loving mother. She left wealth and ease. Not because she's stupid or unbalanced. Because she made a mistake.
You're looking for her?
Yes. And so are the police. She's a nice girl. Pretty. Clever. She's 19.
My age?
Yes, she's a lot like you, Kate. She thought she could take care of herself in any situation. She saw trouble coming, but she felt she could handle it. She was dead wrong.
We hope she isn't dead.
Oh.
But not just for her sake. We have to find her so that we can get our hands on the man who... Well, that's beside the point.
What are you telling me, Mr. Mason?
That something is frightening you or bothering you, Kate. I'm offering you my help now. You want to tell me?
I've nothing to tell.
Kate.
Perry, the waiter's bringing you a telephone.
A message for you, Mr. Mason.
Oh, you have the connection?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Hello? Oh, yes, hello, Paul. Yeah. Okay. All right, let's have it. But don't use any names. Mm-hmm. Yes. Did you find her? Relevant. Man or woman? Oh, woman. Well, I have an appointment with her tomorrow. Night? Well, no, I can't tonight, Paul. All right. Phone her, tell her I'm on my way, and I want you to meet me there. Well, break your date. I'll see you in an hour.
An hour? Oh, we haven't eaten.
I'll buy you a hamburger later.
Well, okay.
Are you going to leave, Mr. Mason?
What? Oh, yes, Kate.
But Mr. Jansen asked you to be his guest.
Well, I have something more important to do than eat. Look, Kate, I'll ask you once more. Is there something you want to tell me?
No, Mr. Mason.
All right, that's up to you. Oh, waiter.
But I'd like to explain.
Well, nothing to explain, Kate. I thought you needed help. You say you don't. Either I'm wrong, or you don't want to tell me. That's up to you. No? Very well.
Well, I'll call the waiter for you. Goodbye, Mr. Mason. Goodbye, Miss Street.
Good night, Kate.
Good night, Kate.
Oh, Stephen, will you go to Mr. Mason's table?
What's happened, Perry?
Oh, Suzanne Barclay's mother wants to see me.
Oh?
Oh, waiter, cancel our order, please.
Now, it's a moment later. As in the office of the manager, Gordy Weber hears...
Mr. Jansen?
Katie!
Mr. Weber, is Mr. Jansen...
Yeah, come in, Katie. You talked to Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Well?
Nothing, he's gone.
Huh?
He had to leave on business. Have you seen Mr. Jansen?
Yeah, well, he was just here. What do you want him for?
To thank him. He covered my lie to Mr. Mason.
Yeah, but on my orders, Kate. Don't forget that. I told him what to do.
Oh.
Sure. I knew it'd make trouble if Mason found out I run the club. So I told Gus to introduce himself as the manager. It was all my idea. First to last.
Yes, Mr. Weber.
And a good idea, if I say so myself. Of course, if a guy don't blow his own horn, nobody else is going to blow it for him. Right?
Yes, Mr. Weber. If you see Mr. Jansen...
Well, Gus only did what I told him. So you can thank me for it.
Kate. Oh, hello, Gordy.
Oh, it's you, Gus. You know you got a positive genius for coming in at the wrong time.
Oh, just a minute.
Don't interrupt me.
Forgive me. Kate, how come you didn't stay with Mr. Mason?
He had to leave.
Did he say why?
Business.
Yeah, but did he say what?
No. I want to thank you, Gus.
Oh, that's sweet of you, Kate.
But I explained to her the whole deal was my idea, right?
Yeah, that's right. It was all Gordy's idea, Kate.
It was a mean little idea.
Huh?
I'm not proud I lied to Mr. Mason, but since I had to...
Well, you did, and you can thank me for helping all...
It was Gus who actually helped me. But it takes a big man to share the credit.
What?
I said it takes a big man to share the credit.
Now, wait a minute. You didn't give me time to finish. Just a second, Kate. I don't want you to think that I'm too little to give Gus his due. Sure, Gus did a good job. You did fine, Gus. You followed my orders to a T. You did okay.
Thanks.
Not at all, Gus. I'm the kind of guy who always gives credit where credit is due. Hey, where are you going, Katie?
I have to help Toby.
Now, stick around. I want to... Yeah, she's in a hurry.
Yeah.
Give me a match for the cigar, huh?
What?
I said, give me a match.
Okay, Gordy. I'll even light it for you.
Now, hold on a second. I want a good light.
Okay.
Uh-huh, yeah. Say, Gus, I want to tell you something. I meant what I said a minute ago.
Oh, what's that, Gordy?
When I said you did a good job. You handled Mason okay. I'm not saying you did as well or better than I could have. But you did okay. And I'm glad to see you get wise.
What did you say, Gordy?
I'm glad to see you wise up. Hand me that ashtray, will you?
Here you are, Gordy.
Yeah. Now, here's what I mean. When you found out that Mason was here tonight, you didn't have to warn me. And you didn't have to do everything you could to help me. Now, I'm not saying I couldn't have handled it by myself. I could have handled it. But the point is, you helped. And that means you finally know which side your bread's buttered on.
Your side, Gordy?
Yeah. And I'm going to remember you didn't try to stab me in the back. Oh, I'll get that. Yeah? Now? Yeah, okay. JT's on his way in the private entrance. I didn't expect him for a couple hours.
Oh, I forgot to tell you. He phoned and I asked him to come.
You tell him about Mason and you taking over?
Gordy, you just got through saying I wouldn't knife you.
Oh, yeah. Excuse it, Gus. A guy like me, I got so many things on my mind, you know. Well, I wanted to see JT anyway, and... look, Gus, what happened? Just between us, okay?
Here. Let me give you another match, Gordy.
Well, nothing like a big cigar to relax a man. Right, pal?
Gordy Weber, the little man with the big cigar. The little man whose inflated ego makes him talk big. Gordy's in for a surprise.
And so is Perry Mason when he sees Suzanne Barclay's mother. You'll join us tomorrow, won't you?
Gee, business. You had a younger brother and sister, and you certainly didn't get jealous of them. My goodness. Oh, I never heard such nonsense.
Well, no, that's not true, Mother. I was jealous. In fact, I hated my brother for years, subconsciously and consciously.
Oh, what a terrible thing to say in front of company, too.
No, now, Mother. Ann Lundell understands what I mean.
Well, it is certainly more than I do. I'm ashamed of you, really. Your brother Leonard is just a wonderful person, and he has done many nice things
for
you.
Yes, I know all that now, Mother. Look, we have got to get to the hospital. Where is Betsy?
Well, you're not taking Betsy to the hospital.
Why, yes, yeah, we thought that was best.
Oh, not at all. No, the best thing is to have your mother meet you when you drive up and take the baby so Betsy can have her mommy all to herself for the first few minutes.
Oh.
Betsy wants her mommy back.
Oh, well, yeah, I can see. Yes, psychologically, that's much better.
Well,
mm-hmm, you're right.
I have never heard such nonsense.
Now, Mother, please, look, I will phone you when we're leaving the hospital and you'll be out in front ready to take the baby.
Not all crowns lie heavily on the head. As the number one man or woman of the radio kingdom, you'll have to admit that the royal life is an easy one. What makes it so is the way in which the station you're listening to now and many others like it have joined together with CBS Radio to bring you the best in entertainment on either coast. Robert Q. Lewis, for example, carries on hilariously in New York. Bing Crosby sings his songs in Hollywood. Yet on CBS Radio, they're no more than a few minutes apart. With equal ease, you can move from one news source to another as CBS Radio's vast network facilities dismiss the miles between news stories. London, Paris, Bonn, Rome, Tokyo. On CBS Radio, they're only moments away from wherever you happen to be when the big news stories break. Best of all, you can put CBS Radio in any room, in your car, or even in your pocket. The smallest transistor radio is all you need to keep worlds of news and entertainment at hand. Worlds which CBS Radio puts at your sovereign disposal every day.
I'm a little disappointed. I thought your mother and Betsy would come along with you.
Well, now, darling, I just told you why. Mother, of course, thinks it's nonsense.
Well, I guess Anne is right, though. Really.
Now, Mother's going to be out in front to take the baby,
yeah.
And you'll be free to pick Betsy up and talk to her.
Yeah, I guess that is best.
Yeah, all right. Now, come on. You got everything?
Yeah, my suitcase.
Yeah, I got that. You're not taking these vases home.
Oh, certainly. They came with the flowers I got. They're pretty vases.
Oh, well, all right, okay. Look around the room now, will you, darling? Make sure you packed everything.
Yeah, I did. I looked in the drawers and the closet. Yeah. I got everything now.
Okay, what's that under the bed?
Oh, my bedroom slippers, wouldn't you know? Well, I'll just put them in this sack. Oh, it's a wonderful feeling to leave a hospital room, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll say.
I've got to stop the desk downstairs and pay the bill.
I stopped there on my way up. It's all taken care of.
Oh, fine. Well, this has to go, too. They always send home formula.
Oh.
They always send home enough formula for 24 hours with you, so I don't have to make it the minute I get home.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah. Oh, did I tell you, Anne said that she made all the arrangements for the baby nurse?
She called me while you were on your way down here and said the nurse would be there today.
All right, all right. Come on. I guess we got everything. The car's parked right out in front of the hospital, and I can't leave it there, so let's get going.
I'm all ready, dear. You go on ahead. I'll just say goodbye to the nurses.
All right, okay. What's the matter?
Well, I keep thinking we've forgotten something. I don't know.
What?
The baby.
What? Oh.
The baddest of feet. Fine thing.
Fine thing, huh? The baby.
Your mother was going to be out in front.
Well, she isn't.
Oh, darling. Of course, now you woke the baby up with all that honking.
Oh, I'm sorry, darling. I didn't think... Betsy, Mother!
Now, don't yell. What are you screaming right in his ear?
Oh, for Pete's sake. All right,
darling,
come on. We might as well get out.
Darling, it's all right. Yes. We're home, sweetheart. This is your home, darling. Yes.
Well, where is everybody? We had it all arranged.
Well, don't worry about it. Get
There's Mother. Mother, I thought you were going to be out here when we drove up.
Well, it's all right. Don't yell at her like that.
Oh, my gosh. I try to organize things and...
Get me that cloth. Get me the cloth. He's spitting up.
Huh? What? Where? What? What?
Right there.
Hello, Mommy.
Cannot find any cloth.
Right on the seat of the car. That one. That one. Just give it here. Give it here. Give it
time, Mommy.
Oh, look at him. He's all upset. Hello, darling. Betsy, Mommy, be right with you.
Look, I tell you what. Give him to me, then you'll be free
to talk to Betsy. No, I can't give him to you right now. Just a second there.
Where's my darling baby. Oh, you come to Grandma. Come to Grandma.
Mother, please, you know what we talked about. Now, don't make such a fuss over him in front of, you know what.
Oh, for my dress, he must have gotten car sick, poor little girl.
Come to Grandma, yes.
Just a minute, Mother, please, will you?
Mother will be right with you, Betsy. At least hold him up so Betsy can see him.
Here, let me take him.
Mother, please don't grab him like that. Can't you see he's upset? He can't be juggled from person to person. Right now he wants his mommy. Yes, he
somebody
wants
else wants her mommy, too. Dear, Betsy wants to...
Well, I raised three children. I certainly know how to hold a baby.
I didn't mean you didn't. Betsy. Look, Betsy, here's your brother.
I'm scared. I think he's awful.
Betsy, come back here,
wait
honey.
A minute, sweetie.
Give him to Grandma.
Well, this is certainly some homecoming.
Betsy?
I was so lonesome for my Betsy.
Were you?
Oh, yes. Didn't you get the letters and cards I sent you?
Yes. Did you get my letters and the pictures I sent you?
Oh, I should say I did, and such beautiful pictures you drew for Mommy. No, I hung them up on the walls of the hospital with scotch tape, and the doctors and the nurses, they came in and they said, my goodness, did your little girl do those? They are just wonderful.
What did they say?
They said, did your little girl do those? They are just wonderful.
I can't decide if I'm going to be a painter or a dancer or a singer when I grow up.
Well, I don't know either, Betsy. You're so good at everything.
Well, hi. What are you doing up here, huh?
We're just talking.
Huh?
I missed Betsy soon. We had so much to catch up on the week I've been gone. And she's been telling me everything she's been doing.
Oh, well, look, Ann Lundell just stopped in.
Did she come to see the baby?
Well, no, as a matter of fact, she came to see you, Betsy, honey. She said she stopped in. She's got a little present for you.
Oh, great, for me?
Yeah, you better run down and see what it is. Go on, ahead.
Come on, honey. Oh, that was very smart of Ann, wasn't it?
Yeah, very smart.
Yeah.
You know, she said everybody was stopping in with things for the baby, so she thought it was good psychology to bring something for Betsy.
Very smart.
Look, why don't you come on down there in the living room with the baby? I wish Mother would stop making such a fuss over him in front of Betsy. She doesn't seem
do
to
too.
Get it, you know?
When we're trying so hard to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Well, she's old-fashioned, dear, you know.
Yeah.
Well, hello, Ann.
She bought me a new book, Mommy. Can I show her the baby?
Why, yes, of course, Betsy. Well, that's very nice of you, Ann.
Oh, I understand the situation all too well. Well, it seems to me you're all making a situation. My goodness. Why, Betsy loves her new brother, don't you, dear?
I guess so. Here he is, Mrs. Lundell.
Oh, my. Oh, that is a nice baby. Nice. Well, he's just Grandma's little dumpling. Yes, he is. Yes, Grandma's little precious dumpling.
Mother.
Have you decided what to name him yet?
No, isn't it terrible?
Well, if he isn't named Chauncey after his grandfather, I know his grandfather's going to be terribly disappointed, isn't he? Yes. He wants to be named Chauncey.
Mother, will you, for Pete's sake, let's not go through all that again.
Well, of course, there's no question who he looks like.
I know. You look just like your daddy, don't you? Huh? Oh, he smiled. Did you see that? He smiled.
Can I go to the door, Mommy?
Oh, yes, will you, dear? See who's at the door. Oh, look at him. He's a darling baby.
Yeah, boy, look at that fist, will you? He's strong, you know.
He's Grandma's boy. Well, he has beautiful eyes for such a tiny baby.
No, darling, what's the trouble? What's the trouble, huh?
Yeah. Mommy!
Oh,
this lady says she's the baby's nurse.
Well, it's no wonder that poor child is crying. If you'd all stand back and give him some air. Has he had his 2 o'clock bottle?
Well, no, but it's only quarter after two.
My babies are all fed on schedule. A sense of discipline should be learned early. I'll take him. Thank you.
Yes.
Now, young man, who's the boss? That's right. Now, let's get organized around here.
We'll return to the couple next door in just a moment. When you're listening to Godfrey and Linkletter, we think you'll agree that entertainment is art. In Godfrey's case, it doesn't matter whether he's spoofing some new notion or sparking excitement with a song. He's always fun to be with. Every weekday, he comes your way with a fresh supply of laughs and music. making CBS Radio's Godfrey Time one of the brightest times of the day. Hear him while you're working, or stop everything and relax all the way. But don't miss a moment of the mischief and the music Godfrey offers day after day. And as your host on CBS Radio's House Party, Art Linkletter demonstrates real artistry too, the art of making people feel at home. Meet new people, make new friends, as any number of interesting and likable people visit you on House Party. Hear House Party on most of these same stations later in the day. And then join us the next time Godfrey comes your way on CBS Radio, where entertainment is an art. And two of our favorite arts are Godfrey and Linkletter.
How's the baby?
I don't know. I haven't seen him.
Yeah. You realize that I wasn't even introduced to that tornado?
Well, she's been busy flying around the house, organizing. Her name is Miss Oglethorpe, by the way.
What, may I ask, is she organizing?
I don't know.
Now, darling, now, take it easy, honey.
My baby, she calls it. She grabbed him away from me, and when your mother tried to pick him up, the nurse roared something about your mother being full of germs, and your mother's furious.
Well, look, we don't have to keep her. I'll fire her tonight. I'll fire
her. Well, we can't. Anne persuaded her to pass up two other wonderful jobs just to come here. Anne says that no matter what we think at first, this nurse is just marvelous.
Yeah, well, I suppose we have to think of what's best for the baby and Betsy.
Yes, but I do think maybe that
she's coming downstairs, Lord.
Oh.
Surprised she didn't slide down the banisters. It's quicker.
Dear.
Well.
Oh, hello, Miss Oglethorpe. Is there anything that you need?
I always take the first day to acclimate myself to a strange house. Tomorrow we can have a conference, and I'll be ready with suggested changes that I think will make it easier and more beneficial for all of us, since we will be living together for 6 weeks.
Yes, Miss Oglethorpe.
6 weeks.
The Couple Next Door is written by Peg Lynch and stars Peg Lynch and Alan Bunce, with Francie Myers, Madeline Pierce, Maxine Stewart, Leona Powers, and Edith Atwater, and is produced by Walter Hart. This is Stuart Metz, inviting you to listen again tomorrow for The Couple Next Door.
We'll continue in just a moment. The Radio Theater Channel. OldTimeRadioListen.com.
Now for our story.
I'm not insinuating anything, Larkin. Why, it's so obvious it's painful. No girl likes to be jilted, as I suppose Peggy must be.
The quarreling, angry voices of the two men rose and fell. Standing by the closed door of Ben Calvert's office, Jessie Ward eavesdropped, unabashed. She couldn't catch everything that was said, but Ben's secretary heard enough for her to understand why Lefty Larkin had come to see Ben this morning. Lefty, Aunt Mary Lane's close friend as well as farm helper. Lefty, who hadn't spoken to Ben Calvert in years. Even Jessie realized what it must have cost him to come to Ben's office. But as she listened, Miss Ward came to the conclusion that Lefty Larkin would do anything, make any sacrifice, if he thought it would help Peggy Douglas, Aunt Mary's niece. Ben's voice became cold. To Jessie, it was a warning signal. Even after all these years, it still frightened her. But obviously, it didn't have that effect on Lefty Larkin. Jessie hurried back to her desk. She was just in time. For a second later, the door to Ben's office was flung open and Lefty walked quickly across the outer room and out into the street without a word.
Well.
Jessie!
Yes, Ben?
Have you located Kit?
Why, no, I...
Well, get her. Get her on that phone or go over to that auto court. But get her right away.
All right, then.
You needn't go into the other office. Here, use this phone.
Is there any better way than calling the manager's office?
No, you'll have to call there and they'll send for her.
2461, please.
What's the matter?
The line's busy. I'll try again in a minute. If you've signed those letters...
No, I haven't signed them, and I'm not going to right now.
It would only
and don't bother me about it.
Well, Lefty Larkin did upset you, didn't he?
Lefty? No. I'm angry, Jesse, yes, but not because of that hired hand of Mary Lane's. I'm angry with myself. As a matter of fact, I'm going to take Larkin's advice. He said, Ben, you've always thought you could control everything. And, Jesse, that's exactly what I'm going to do. Exactly. I should have stepped in long before now.
About what?
Didn't you hear the conversation?
Well, when Lefty Larkin arrived, he told me he wanted to see you about your son-in-law.
Yes. According to Larkin, that little Peggy Douglas is being the unwilling victim of Bill's attention. Of course, the setup is perfectly clear to me. That niece of Mary Lane's is jealous of Kit. She'd like nothing better than to cause trouble. That whole bunch on the Lane farm would like nothing better than to see Kit and Bill break up.
Well, that doesn't quite follow, Ben.
Why not?
If you think that, then how do you explain Larkin's coming here and all?
Oh, that. Just one of their typical self-righteous acts. Making a big show. Putting Peggy in a good light. Well, this confirms what I've suspected all along. There is some trouble between Bill and Kit. That's why she's going to California.
Oh, I don't know. I wouldn't be too sure of that.
You sound as if you found out something.
No. But from what I've seen of Kit, well, I can hardly imagine her giving up so easily. Running away, so to speak.
You mean you don't think she suspects that Bill and Peggy are...
Who knows what Kit thinks?
If she doesn't know, it's time someone told her. And I'm going to be the one to do it.
Oh, Ben, for heaven's sake, it's her life. Why don't you let her alone?
Because I don't think she knows what she's doing. Because her well-being happens to mean something to me, Jesse.
Now, look, you don't have to justify anything with me. It's because you're principally concerned with what the town will say. If Bill Meade were involved with anyone else, but because it's Mary Lane's niece that he...
All right, Jesse, all right.
If you were really concerned with Kit's pride, I shouldn't think you'd want her to hold a boy who... Well, who didn't want her?
Bill doesn't know what he's doing. Peggy Douglas can't hold a candle to Kit. Bill's just having the pressure put on him. He's being worked on.
Well, you should know how that's done.
I don't like that remark, Jesse.
Oh, Ben, I've understood this thing from the very start. You've never thought too much of Bill.
No, but Kit wanted him.
Sure, Kit wanted him. But I think what really stimulated you was the fact that Bill was more or less engaged to Peggy. By helping Kit break that up, you saw a chance to satisfy your old grudge against Aunt Mary.
Oh, be quiet, Jesse. I don't care about any of that now. The thing is that I'm not going to have Kit made a fool of. Nor myself, for that matter. I'm going to straighten Bill out. Get this thing settled.
Well, you're going to have to work fast. Kit's leaving this afternoon.
No. No, she isn't.
What?
She's not going, Jesse. I'm going to see to that.
And how do you intend to stop her?
I'll stop her, all right. Try that number again.
Ben, why don't I go over to the auto court and get her? Wouldn't that be simple?
Well, all right.
I'll drive over right now.
But one thing, Jesse.
Yes?
I trust I can rely on your so-called sense of discretion.
Of course, Ben. It's your affair, not mine.
Well, just don't tell her why I want to see her.
I won't, Ben. I won't say a word.
And a few minutes later, Jesse Ward's car drives into the Wakefield Auto Court. Getting out, she walks to the door of Bungalow B and knocks.
Oh, hello, Jesse.
Hello, Kit.
Come on in.
Oh, thanks, Kit. Well, you look as if you were all packed and ready to go.
Oh, yes.
Is Bill going to be able to see you off?
Mm-hmm. Fortunately, he was able to get a 36-hour pass. Well, what's on your mind, Jesse?
Your father wants to see you.
Oh? We called the manager's office, but the line was busy, so Ben asked me to come and get you.
You mean he wants to see me now?
Uh-huh.
Right away? Well, why is it so urgent?
I really don't know.
Well, what does he want to see me about?
He didn't say, Kit. I can hardly believe that. What's the mystery? Well, I really shouldn't tell you, Kit.
Yes, you probably shouldn't, but go on.
I must say, I don't agree with Ben's attitude in this. He doesn't want you to leave Wakefield.
I see. That's nothing new.
I should have said he's determined to stop you from going.
He can't.
Well, I don't know. I've discovered that when Ben says he's going to do a thing, he always does it.
Oh, this is getting ridiculous.
He's still hopping on the idea that, well, that you and Bill have had a quarrel or something.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Well, perhaps, Kit, if you could humor him a little. Postpone your trip for a while.
No. No, I can't do that.
You have to go.
Well, that is, I've already made my plans and I'm going. You can tell Dad that for me. I'm afraid you'll have to return to the office without me, Jesse.
You know what he'll do, don't you? He'll come straight over here himself.
Well, let him. Oh, Lord, if there's one thing I don't want at this point, it's another row.
Kid, I've known Ben for a great many years. I've been closer to him than you have. If he says you're not going to leave, he'll have something worked out.
But I don't see what he can do. Anyway, there's nothing I could do about it. I can't get on a train now.
You have your car, haven't you?
Yes.
You could drive over to Stanton. Get on the train there.
Yes, I could. You could drive the car back.
I'll go back to the office and tell Ben that you've already left.
Why are you doing this, Jesse?
What?
I never thought I'd see the day when you'd be so eager to help me out.
I could tell you if I knew why it was so important for you to go to California.
Oh. So you still think this trip of mine has an ulterior motive?
Well, Kit, let's say that I'm sure you have your reasons for going. And I have mine for wanting to help you.
Kit looked sharply at Jesse. If Miss Ward had any idea... But no. Kit quickly reassured herself that Jesse couldn't possibly know. But I wonder if you'd be so sure, Kit, if you knew the data Jesse'd been collecting. The small and trivial things that she's been adding up in her mind. I wonder if Ben's secretary does suspect the truth. She would certainly understand why Kit did have to leave Wakefield if she were going to have a child. But there's one thing that's certain. However much Miss Ward suspects, however much she knows, she wouldn't help Ben's daughter unless doing so would help her achieve her own goal.
And now, the Gopher. Early this morning, Sammy Gopher got up, packed his bag, said goodbye to Carrie Bell, and walked out of Sylvia Allison's house, but not out of her life. When Sammy discovered the true character of the girl he was going to marry, how she planned and lied and maneuvered against her family and himself, he had a terrible quarrel with her. Sylvia used all her best tactics on Sammy. She went through the whole comedy of tears she so often used with so much success. But she doesn't know yet that this time it didn't work. Meanwhile, the Goldbergs have just stopped outside a little eating place right on the outskirts of the town in which the Allisons live. The question of whether to call the Allisons or just drive in on them is being discussed by Molly and Jake, but no matter what the Goldbergs do, they're in for a surprise as big as the one they're going to give.
So step out of the car, Molly.
Well, let us wait a second till Seymour comes back.
What is there to wait? You want breakfast?
Yeah, one breakfast, but if the place is not open...
Well, the gasoline station is open. Come on, if you want to telephone, there must be a telephone booth in the gas station.
All right, so drive over a little ways there, darling, with my high heels. I can't walk on the pebbles on the road.
Are you going to call me?
Call family and tell them to hear. My opinion is yes. I think we should call family, Mr. Allison says, dear.
And my opinion is that if we decided our arrival should be a surprise, a surprise would it be.
As you say, dear.
as you said, Jane, but if it wasn't so early in the A.M.
What has the A.M. got to do with it?
I mean if it was P.M.
Timo is waiting at us now.
So come, let's go.
All right. The place must be open already.
Come on, boy.
All right, so we'll have breakfast, Jane, and we'll see. And then Bob, you'll decide, so we'll do.
I say let it be a surprise.
Right.
That's the way you wanted it. And that's the way you let it be.
All right. But I'm thinking, Jack dear, that the surprise is going to be on the other foot.
What do you mean?
I mean, if we call, if we don't call, the biggest surprise we'll get. All the way, Jack dear, all the way from New York, I was thinking how this family changed since he left us. How is this family, this man, is going to be married soon? How is he different from all the families we knew? Hey, Jay, darling, we knew so many families. Each one was a surprise to us. And it changed each year. Each year, the family became different. Oh, you remember, Jay, how surprised it was when the baby all of a sudden became a child. And the child became a boy, and then the boy became a man. And suddenly the young man is all of a sudden grown up, and he's going to have his own wife and his own life. Oh, I say, darling, when it comes to surprises, you don't have to plan them. Life plans enough without
them. All right, Molly. All right. Don't start with the reminiscing.
Yes.
And don't start with the philosophy.
Yes.
And don't start with the Shakespeare. Come, we'll have our breakfast.
Yes.
And if
yes.
you want to call, we'll call. If you don't want to call, we won't call.
All right. Now, come, as you come, say, if you run a course, we'll call. Okay. I say my opinion is to call the
best. As the Goldbergs get out of their car, enjoying the pleasures of expectation, and the delight of deciding whether their surprise should be complete. At the Allison house, Carrie Bell, the Allison maid, is the only one who knows that Sammy's gone. Poor Carrie Bell. Doesn't know exactly how to tell this to Sylvia. Doesn't know exactly what it will mean. And somehow feels part of the guilt that caused his departure. For Carrie Bell knows the whole story of Sylvia's duplicity. And as Sylvia calls her, Carrie Bell goes upstairs slowly, as if she were carrying an unexploded bomb.
Miss Sylvia. Oh, what am I going to do? How am I going to tell her? Oh. Yes, Miss Sylvia, I'm coming.
Come in,
Calvin. Good morning, Miss Sylvia. Calvin.
Mr. Sammy isn't up yet, is he?
Miss Sylvia.
Calvin, I don't want you to remember anything you heard last night. Nothing I said taken. Nothing you heard Mr. Sammy say to me. When people quarrel, they say a lot of things they don't mean. Promise me, Carabelle. You didn't say anything to my father when he came home, did you?
Miss Sylvia.
Do you want to know why Sammy went to bed so early? Do you want to know why I didn't? Carabelle, always remember, I'm going to take good care of you.
Miss Sylvia. Oh, Miss Sylvia. Miss Sylvia. Miss Sylvia. I can't tell you. Miss Sylvia, I don't want to be the hard luck one. I don't want to be the one that has to tell you.
Tell me what? Tell me what? Tell me, Carabelle.
Sammy.
Carabelle.
He's gone, Miss Sylvia. I tried to talk to him and I tried to tell him to wait.
What do you mean?
He's up and left, Miss Sylvia.
What? Sammy?
Go, Miss Sylvia. All he said was goodbye. Goodbye. Here's something for you. Goodbye.
Carabelle. Come in, Daddy dear.
Miss Sylvia.
How do you feel, Sylvia?
All right, Daddy dear.
Carabelle told me you weren't feeling so well last night.
Well, I feel a little better this morning.
That's good. Good.
Carabelle. Go down and fix breakfast.
Tell Sammy I'll have breakfast with him. And fix me a glass of boiled water and a pitcher of my coffee.
Yes.
Well, darling. Sammy and I quarreled last night.
Don't tell me a smart boy like Sammy believes Leah and Ed's lies.
He did, Daddy. He did.
Well, he won't after I see you. Now, you just rest yourself and leave everything to your father, yes?
Daddy.
I spoke I spoke to Ed yesterday. I let him know exactly what I felt and thought about this fantastic story he and Leah concocted. Now, if Leah wants to divorce Ed, that's her business, with which I am no longer concerned. The idea that she should think that you would have anything to do with it. I told her, if he was fool enough to think that I would be affected by such a fraud, then he's a bigger fool than even I thought he was.
Daddy.
Oh, don't worry, darling. Don't worry.
Who is it?
It's me.
Come in, Caravan.
I've all the water on the table.
Well, thank you.
Caravan, come here. I want you to help me with something.
Did you wake up Sammy, Carabelle? Oh, I guess he's sleeping. It's rather early. Just don't bother. Don't
Why didn't you come right up and tell me? Why didn't you call me before Sammy left the house?
I didn't have time, Miss Silver. He just said goodbye and left.
Oh, you could have called me. You could have called up to me.
I didn't even have a chance, Miss Silver. I tried to talk to him. I tried to tell him to wait and speak to you or speak to your father, but he just wouldn't wait. He just walked through the kitchen and left.
He said he was going home. Did he say at all where he was going?
He didn't say nothing.
Well, why didn't you follow him? Why didn't you try to find out?
I couldn't think of nothing, Miss Silver. My head was just going round and round. I couldn't think of nothing. I told him he shouldn't go, and I just begged
him. Oh, you should have stopped him. No matter what, you should have stopped him.
This is trouble, just trouble.
Stop crying, will you? I've got to think.
Singing won't do no good, Miss Silver. Nothing will do no good. He just left.
Oh, the telephone. He's calling. He's calling. Oh, get my slippers, Sarah. They're over there. Get me something to get in.
Here, yeah, Miss Silver. Your father must have took the phone.
Oh, well, no, then.
Let me go down.
Go away.
We're in trouble.
Stop it.
But it's going to be a greater surprise than Mr. Allison thinks, and a terrible shock for Molly. What will Sylvia do now that Sammy's packed up and left? Be sure to listen again tomorrow to the next episode of The Goldbergs. Sylvia doesn't give up easily because she has too much to lose. Mrs. James Fleming saying goodbye.
Hi there, everybody. This is Ken Maynard and Tarzan. Inviting you to join us here in the tack room of the Diamond K Ranch. So pull up a chair and get cozy while I tell you about Pirate Booty. A strange, weird tale of buried treasure.
From the tack room of Ken Maynard's Diamond K Ranch, we're bringing you transcribed stories of adventure. Stories of circus life, fascinating tales of the Old West where cowboys still follow the cattle trails. Stories of rodeos and parades, colorful legends of the red man, hidden gold and buried treasure. The exciting tales from the Diamond K are told by Hollywood's champion of Western stars, internationally famous Ken Maynard. Say, Buckaroos, do you like adventure? Do you like to go on treasure hunts with your gang and discover exciting things? Well, I'm going to tell you about a real treasure that you can discover for yourself. And you won't have to travel very far, only to the nearest mailbox. Now, I'm talking about the Diamond K record album of Western stories told by your favorite Westerner, Ken Maynard. These stories are especially for you young Buckaroos, and do you know why this album is such a treasure? Because it's made for you personally, and right on the record, you'll hear Ken call you by name. Just imagine hearing Ken say,
"Hello, Tony. Hello, George. This is Ken Maynard with a story for you."
It'll be your very own personalized album. Each one is in beautiful color with pictures of Ken and Tarzan on the front and on the two big 8-inch pure vinylite unbreakable records inside, too. So you won't have to worry about dropping them. And here's the best part. They're amazingly inexpensive. You get two complete Wild West stories in an album, personalized with a message from Ken to you for only $1. That's all, just $1. And here's how to discover real treasure. Send your name and address to Ken Maynard in care of this station, Market Records, and enclose just a $1 bill. Your Diamond K record album will be sent to you right away, so don't delay. Send in today.
Well, sir, folks, Pirate Booty is a strange, unforgettable tale of hidden treasure buried at La Porte, somewhere off the bay not far from Houston, Texas. One spring morning, as I wandered into strange sections of town, I found myself in a little curio shop near the end of Marquet Street. And I was having a fine time looking at the priceless old relics left at the curio shop by the buccaneers and adventurers and seafaring men. And do you know, the one thing that was of more interest to me than all the rest was an old leather-bound ship's log I found tucked away behind a pile of maps and papers. I opened the book and glanced through it. It was Captain Hale's diary, a true story of his adventures on the treasure ship Madagascar. I called the shopkeeper and asked him how much he wanted for the old log. He got real confidential and said, "Why, let me tell you, Mr. Maynard, I couldn't think of selling that book. It would be just like breaking a trust. You see, Captain Hale was my great-grandfather. A pirate and a cutthroat, yes, but nevertheless, he was my great-grandfather." Then he watched me as I thumbed through the yellow pages of the old book. And he continued to speak. His voice became kind of mysterious. "Mr. Maynard," he said, "you look like a man with an adventurous spirit. I have something I'd like to show you. This, Mr. Maynard, is Jean Lafitte's map of his hidden treasure." I looked at him for a moment. I guess I must have shown a little surprise, because he quickly said, "I know what you're thinking, Mr. Maynard, but this map is a fake, like so many that have been found before. But before you make up your mind, listen to what I'm going to tell you." He sat back in his desk chair, and his voice seemed to relax a little as he started his weird tale of adventure. Well, it seemed that Captain Hale, pirate and cutthroat, as the little man had called him, dropped anchor at Matagorda Bay to await orders before setting sail again. The hour was around 5 bells, and Captain Hale was sitting alone in his cabin when the door softly opened. Without a sound, suddenly there stood beside Captain Hale a man whose skin was dark and swarthy. And as he spoke, his voice was soft and low. "You do not know me, Captain Hale, but you knew my father in India. You were together on the Black Watch, a pirate ship that sailed the seven seas. You were never friends, but you had one thing that bound you together, a map. One that would lead to a fortune, Jean Lafitte's map of his hidden treasure. I recovered it shortly after my father died. It was his wish that I find you, as you were both partners." Captain Hale's face was white as he turned and stared at the young East Indian. Then he drew a knife from his belt as he said, "Give me the map. It belongs to me." But the Indian was cunning. He leaped quickly and wrenched the knife from Captain Hale's trembling hand. "Let us say it belongs to both of us, Captain. I will carry the map as my father always did. And as soon as the sun sets, we will take a small boat and row to Bay Ridge. No one must ever know where we go. A few miles from the ridge, there stands an old house, and in that house, the treasure is buried." As they headed into Galveston Bay, the fog grew dense. It cut and burned their cheeks like desert sand. And as they crossed the bay and started up a narrow, shallow stream, Captain Hale saw the outline of the bank a few feet away. They hid the boat in the rushes and crawled up the muddy, wet slope to the bluff. The bushes were thick, the trail steep and narrow, and the night wind was growing cold. Captain Hale followed the Indian as best he could. And then as the fog cleared for a moment, they saw the old house. It looked like a castle covered with mist. The castle they saw turned out to be a deserted old hut, but it was a mighty welcome sight. The east wind was blowing and twisting like an ocean gale. Well, Captain Hale and the Indian started a fire with the pine boughs that lay on the floor, warmed themselves and dried their clothes. It was some time later when they stretched out on the earthen floor to get some rest. They would search for the treasure as soon as the morning grew light. The wind finally died down and the night was still. The only light in the room came from the red coals in the open fire. Then suddenly Captain spoke. "Are you awake?" The Indian's voice was hushed. "I have not slept, Captain Hale." Captain reached for his knife as he whispered, "Someone is standing in this room and I can feel it. But they're not moving. Nothing human could stand that still. My knife is ready. Give the word and we'll strike together. It's his life or ours." Suddenly a voice echoed through the room. "Wait, Captain Hale. There's no need for fear." Captain Hale's hand shook, and the knife fell to the floor as he was blinded by a sudden flash of light that seemed to surround a dark figure. Then a hollow voice spoke. "Don't you recognize me, Captain Hale? I was rather famous in my day." Then they saw him standing there in the room. It was Jean Lafitte. Jean Lafitte smiled and said, you think I'm a ghost? Do you think I'd be here if I weren't? I'd be sailing the seven seas in search of adventure. But enough talk of me. Come, let me show you what you're searching for. The treasure you've dreamed about all these years. Thousands have searched. Many have died. But I guard it well. The captain and the Indian worked quickly. They moved a large stone that lay in front of the fire. Then they saw it. A copper casket filled with jewels, more precious than gold. Diamonds, pearls, emeralds. Captain Hale dropped to his knees and reached for the casket. His face filled with greed, but Lafitte stopped him. You will not touch the treasure, Captain. First I must speak. Then Lafitte said, to the man who takes this treasure falls a great responsibility. Not one penny may be evilly or selfishly spent. The treasure is mine to give as I choose. I paid for it with my life. With it, you can balance somewhat the burden of guilt I carry for its sake. If you both promise to keep faith, then come back tomorrow, 1 hour before sunset, and the treasure will be yours. Then Captain Hale cried, look, the treasure, it's gone. Lafitte smiled and said, yes, I guard it well. Man alive, I tell you, I was excited. I like stories firsthand, so that's why I go out and get them for myself. Now, I'm going to finish telling you this adventure in just a minute, but right now, I want to take just a second to tell you, Buckaroo, something firsthand. I'm talking about the K-shirt and no fooling. When I say I think the K-shirt is pretty terrific, that's coming straight from the feedback, you might say, because I wear the K-shirt myself. And doggone it, I really like them because they're kind of easygoing and comfortable. You just pull them on, no buttons or collars to fuss with. And your mom's going to like the K-shirt, too, because it's so easy to wash. It doesn't need to be ironed unless she wants to. The K-shirt itself is kind of a nice, creamy beige like desert sand with a big red diamond K on the front. And Tarzan and I've got our pictures there saying howdy to you all. Well, there's the K-shirt. If you figure you want one like I wear and like all the kids are getting, just send me your name and address to K-shirt in care of this station and write what size you wear. They come in 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, or 12s. And send along a dollar bill for the fellow that makes the K-shirt so he'll make one special for you. Well, now let's get back to the pirate booty. Seems that old Captain Hale had his plans already made, even before he and the Indian returned to the ship that morning. This was his chance. The moment they boarded the ship, he called his two mates, ordered them to seize the Indian, chain and lock him in the hatch where no living man could escape. For 30 long years, he dreamed and searched for this treasure, and now only a few hours and it would all be his. The fog had lifted when he lowered the small boat and rowed into the bay. He remembered the stream. The print was still in the mud where they'd hid the boat the night before. As he fought his way through the brush again, he saw the old hut. His heart pounded till he could hardly breathe. He stumbled through the door and fell to his knees. He saw the rock. Yes, it was just as he had left it the night before. He crawled to the stone and tore at the earth with his bare fingers. He laughed as he remembered Lafitte's words. With this treasure, you can balance somewhat the burden of guilt I carry for its sake. Then he thought, I can rule as a king. With trembling hands, he moved the stone, but there was no casket, no gold, no jewels, nothing but dirt. His fingers bled and his body ached, and his mind grew numb. All night he worked digging there, digging here, digging there, digging everywhere. The wind blew and the earth rumbled like the sea in a storm, but the treasure was gone. Well, sir, folks, the little man got up from his desk as he finished speaking and opened the old leather-bound ship's log. See here, Mr. Maynard, he said, here's what Captain Hale wrote on the last page of his diary. When I, Captain Hale, returned to the ship, I found the hatch door still locked, but the Indian had gone, disappeared. But somehow I felt the crime-stained treasure of Jean Lafitte still lies hidden somewhere on the coast of Bay Ridge. Perhaps someday, when the winds are quiet and the sea is calm, I shall return and visit again with the ghost of Jean Lafitte. Signed, Captain Hale. Good ship, Madagascar.
Say, Ken, that was really a colossal adventure story. And, Buckaroos, Don't forget, if you're looking for adventure, you'll find loads of it in Ken Maynard's personalized Diamond K record album. Two complete stories of the Wild West on two big 8-inch pure vinylite records. You know, vinylite is expensive. It's the new, finer material that the best records are made of. But the Diamond K album for you buckaroos isn't expensive. No, sir. It's an amazing $1 for the two complete stories in a colorful album with pictures of Ken and Tarzan on the front and on the records. The records are standard 78 RPM speed for the regular kind of phonograph. And don't forget, Ken makes these stories just for you, and he'll call you by name right on your record. You'll hear him say,
"Hello, Mike. Hello, Betty,"
or whatever your name is, and boy, you'll be the talk of the neighborhood. So if you want a real adventure, send your name and address to Ken Maynard in care of this station, Market Records, and enclose just a $1 bill. It's as easy as rolling downhill, so write today. Now, here's Ken Maynard to tell you about his next story.
Well, folks, how did you like that tale of pirate booty? It looks like there's plenty of work to be done here on the ranch. So this is Ken Maynard and Tarzan. Closing the door of the tack room at the Diamond K Ranch till next time we meet, when I'll tell you the adventure at Maverick Valley. In the meantime, get them $1 bills in the mail today for some real Western fun.
You've been listening to Tales from the Diamond K, told by Ken Maynard, internationally famous cowboy and Hollywood's champion of Western stars. Tales from the Diamond K was transcribed and produced in Hollywood.
And we just heard four episodes of soap operas on Soap Time, and that's a program you can hear Monday through Friday on the Radio Theater Channel, and it's in the same order, I should say. Perry Mason is the first quarter hour, followed by The Couple Next Door, followed by Aunt Mary and the Goldbergs. And we threw in Tales of the Diamond K, that Western program at the end to basically fill time, but it's an interesting show all the same. While it's advertised, we're going to go to the FBI now and see what's up at the Federal Bureau of Investigation so many, many years ago.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society presents This Is Your FBI. This Is Your FBI, the official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Presented, transcribed as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. Tonight, the subject of our FBI file, armed robbery. Its title, The Toy Bandit.
Through the years, types of crimes have remained in general the same. There have always been thieves, kidnappers, murderers, blackmailers, and so on. But crime detection methods have advanced rapidly. Science has developed new and more effective techniques for apprehending criminals. Rarely, if ever, are the progressive steps in tracking down a criminal the same. Science supplies your FBI agent with his tools. But the agent himself, as is proved by tonight's case from the FBI files, must have imagination, intelligence, and initiative to know which tools to use and when to use them. That's why the men of your FBI are selected with much painstaking care. Those who finally pass muster command widespread respect and confidence. Tonight's FBI file opens in a wooded area on the outskirts of a large western city. A man sits leaning against the trunk of a tree, fondling an almost empty bottle, as a young boy quietly sneaks up behind him.
Boom, 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 boom!
Huh? Oh, hello, boy.
You're dead. I shot you.
Yeah, no sense wasting bullets.
You can't talk. You're dead.
Oh.
Well, all right. You can be alive again.
Thank you.
There's nobody else around to shoot.
Which gun did you kill me with?
Both of them. I emptied both rocket guns right into you. Wait, I have to fill them again.
You're all full.
Wish it was that easy to fill this.
I know what's in there. Dirty old whiskey.
Son, speak kindly of the departed.
I'm a cowboy. I don't drink whiskey. I drink milk.
It's not as good.
My mom said it'll make me big and strong.
Safer drinking this. Whiskey never curdles.
Boom, boom. You're dead again.
Rockets don't go boom. They go
shh, shh, shh. How do you know? Have you got any rocket guns?
Have any? I am a rocket gun.
You couldn't shoot me.
And why not?
Cowboys that drink whiskey can't shoot straight. It says so right in my book.
Want me to show you?
I don't want to play like yesterday. You bend your finger and say I'm dead. That's no fair.
You want to play fair? Give me a gun.
You don't know how to shoot a rocket gun.
Yes, I do. I'll take one of yours and hide behind that tree. You hide here, and we'll sneak up on each other.
You gotta be an Indian.
Ugh.
Okay. Here, use this gun. It's broke.
Thank you. Now, don't peek.
I won't. Don't forget, when you're dead three times, I win.
Okay. Now I'm an Indian.
Ready?
Not yet.
Ready now? Here I come, ready or not. Where's that Indian? I'll shoot you. I'll kill you dead. My rocket gun is loaded. I'm pointing it straight at... Hey, where are you? Mister, where are you? Mister! Mister! He stole my gun.
He did steal the gun and within an hour used it to rob a bank. Minutes after the holdup, the local FBI field office was notified. Special agents Jim Taylor and George Wilson were assigned to the case and went right to work. The first step was to interview the bank teller.
Mr. Butler, can you describe the bandit?
Well, he was about 6 feet tall, kind of thin, about 40 or 45 years old, and he was wearing an old blue jacket and brown pants.
Go on, please.
An old brown hat, no tie, and... Well, that's about all I remember.
Mm-hmm. Any scars on his face?
No, but he had a pug nose and he needed a shave.
Mm-hmm. What color hair?
Black, I think.
Mm-hmm. Eyes?
I don't remember.
Tell me, did he touch anything during the robbery? Anything you might have left fingerprints on?
No, I handed him the money and he stuffed it into the pockets of his coat.
Do you have serial numbers of any of the stolen bills?
Well, $1,000 worth of the 20s were new. I'll get you the numbers.
Well, that's fine. Is there anything else you remember?
Well, he'd been drinking. I could smell his breath 2 feet away.
Was he drunk?
No, he talked too well. Like he was educated.
Oh, what did he say?
See, don't be afraid. You don't want any trouble, and neither do I. You've got a lot of money. I don't have any. Hand me some, and I'll put the gun back in my pocket.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you describe the gun?
Well, it was long, had a chromium barrel, and a red handle with some letters scratched on top. Three letters like initials.
Can you remember what those letters were?
I'm afraid not.
Say, it had a long chrome barrel and a red handle.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like maybe it was a toy.
Jim.
Oh, hello, George. Mr. Butler, this is Special Agent Wilson.
Oh, how do you
Butler.
Do?
The guard says he ran out after the holdup and saw the bandit.
Did he see the getaway car?
There wasn't any, at least not out front. The bandit ran and disappeared around the corner onto Madison Street.
Oh.
By the time the guard got out there, he was gone.
Mr. Butler here smelled whiskey on his breath.
Madison Street is full of saloons.
Yes, that's right. Well, thanks, Mr. Butler. Come on, George, let's check all of them.
The beginning of every investigation is almost pure routine. An alert was radioed to highway patrolmen. Nearby, police roadblocks were established on every highway. Bus terminals, railroad stations, and airports were watched. The description was teletyped to FBI headquarters. All those things happening while agents Taylor and Wilson went from saloon to saloon, interviewing waiters, bartenders, porters, every possible person who might have seen the bandit.
Let's try this place, George, huh?
Right.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, man. What'll it be?
We're special agents of the FBI. Here are my credentials.
Okay.
We're looking for a man about 6 feet tall, pug-nosed, black hair. He's wearing a blue jacket and brown pants.
And he might have been out of breath when he came in.
Hey, yeah.
Was he here?
Yeah, about a half hour ago.
Huh?
Two drinks, no tip.
Where is he?
Oh, he's gone.
Is he a regular customer?
No, never seen him before. Brother, he polishes off double bourbons like they was root beer.
Did he say where he was going?
No, he wasn't gabby. He come in, asked me where the washroom was, and he come back, polished off his juice and blue. Why? Who is he?
He held up the savings bank around the corner.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he used a toy gun. Had a long chromium barrel and a red handle.
Oh, he's the one who left it.
He left it here?
Yeah, wait a minute. Is this what you mean right here?
Looks like it.
The laundry guy found it in the towel hamper, and I kind of had an idea my kid would like it.
Well, if that's the gun we think it is, it's evidence. May we see it, please?
You get a receipt, bro.
Okay, here it is.
Now, here are those letters in the handle, Jim.
Yeah. K-V-Y.
The guy stuck up a bank with a kid's gun? Brother, you gotta hand it to him. That takes guts, huh?
To scare somebody with a gun? Sure, it takes real courage.
Let's get going, George.
The efficiency of a law enforcement organization is determined in large part by the speed with which it can move. For time is a vital element in every case. In this one, while FBI headquarters searched its modus operandi files to see if they contained the name of a bank robber who favored toy guns, while nearby local police were sent all additional information, Special Agents Taylor and Wilson went to the school board and searched the records for a student whose initials were KVY. There was one, named Kenneth Vincent Young. They immediately started for his home.
Should be the next house, George.
Oh. Yeah, it is. There's the name in the mailbox.
Oh. Oh, hello, son.
Fall down, you're both dead.
We didn't know you were shooting at us.
Nah, grown-ups are no fun.
Hey, cowboy, can I see that gun?
No.
Are those your initials on the handle?
I kill every Indian on the block with this gun. I kill him every day.
Now you got two holsters there. Where's your other gun?
A man crooked it off me. You want to play cowboys and Indians?
Well, maybe later.
I'm a cowboy.
Well, all the cowboys I know have names.
I've got a name. I'm Cactus Kenny.
Is your whole name Kenneth Vincent Young?
Only in the house with Mom. Out here, I'm Cactus Kenny.
Okay, Cactus, we're FBI agents.
Real ones?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Gee.
We think maybe we can find the man who stole your gun.
Oh, boy. Can I be a G-man instead of a cowboy?
Sure.
And can I still be Cactus Kenny?
We'll arrange the whole thing. Now tell me, Kenny, do you know the man who took your gun?
Uh-huh. He was the Indian, I was the cowboy.
Mm-hmm. What's his name?
I don't know.
Where does he live?
Oh, down there in that big brown house.
What does he look like?
He's a big man, bigger than my dad used to be.
Where did he steal your gun?
Up the hill by the trees. I snuck around behind him. I was a cowboy. And he was holding a bottle of whiskey. And I killed him.
Whiskey?
Sounds like the right man.
Bang, bang, bang!
Hey, you can't shoot us. We're on the same side.
Who can I shoot?
Well, you just hold your powder, Kenny. We'll try to find your old playmate. Well, let's hope Kenny was right about him living here, huh?
Afternoon.
Afternoon, ma'am. We're special agents of the FBI. Here are my credentials.
The FBI.
You're the landlady?
Yes. I'm Alice Henderson.
Well, Miss Henderson, we believe a man that we're looking for lives here.
Who?
We don't know his name, but he's about 45 years old. Has black hair. He's on the thin side. Wore an old blue jacket this morning with patched brown pants. We heard he'd been drinking.
Don't say another word.
You know him?
Sure enough.
What's his name?
Mr. Carter.
Is Mr. Carter in?
No, I'm sorry. He went out 3-4 hours ago.
Where to?
Well, he had on his good suit. Maybe he went speeching.
I beg your pardon?
I can see you all don't know Mr. Ray Carter.
No, we don't.
Why, the man can't hardly say pass the butter less than he makes a talk.
Mm-hmm. And where does he make these speeches?
Mostly by the park.
But what does Mr. Carter talk about?
Everything. He just naturally likes to make a speech.
Tell me, do you expect him back this evening?
He should be. I just cleaned his room, and his box of tools are just sitting there in the corner.
What kind of tools?
Carpenters.
Oh, Jim, it'd sure help if we could examine his room.
Yeah.
Why, you come right ahead.
Oh, we can't yet, ma'am, but do you mind if Agent Wilson waits here?
Of course not.
Thank you.
I'll get a search warrant, George. Be right back.
Securing a search warrant, examining the possessions of a suspect, doesn't always produce results. Ray Carter's room contained the clothes he wore during the robbery and a kit of carpenter's tools. Fingerprints from the tools were wire-photoed to Washington. Again, the files showed no record. A surveillance was maintained at the boarding house, but Carter never returned. Meanwhile, the parade of interviews continued, this time with carpenters who might know Carter, with construction firms for which Carter might have worked.
Jim, anything in on Carter?
Yeah, a construction company in Valley Falls had a picture of Carter in their files.
When can we get it?
Oh, it's here already. I called the bank teller, too. He's on his way in now. If he makes a positive item, George, we'll run off copies.
Where's the picture now?
Here. Third one down in this pile.
A good, clear picture.
Yeah, it is. Oh, the construction company also sent along this list. Yeah.
Who are these people?
Carter's references.
Those your check marks?
Yeah, I called the police in each city just in case Carter contacts one of his old friends.
Any word on the stolen money?
No, Carter must be spending the old money first. If he passed one of those new 20s around here, I think we'd know it.
Yeah. Oh, over here, Mr. Butler.
Oh, have you found the holdup man?
No, not yet, sir, but we think we know who it was. Mr. Butler, will you please look at these pictures carefully? See if you can find one of the bandit there, will you?
All right.
Just take all the time you want.
Thank you. Oh, this is the man.
George, it's Carter.
And now back to the FBI file, The Toy Bandit.
Earlier in tonight's program, you heard a bartender express grudging admiration for the bank robber, an attitude toward criminals which is too widespread, an attitude that there is something glamorous about a man who would hold up a bank with a toy gun. Some people are still under the mistaken belief that criminals are romantic, clever, brave, even courageous. Your FBI has had more experience than most with lawbreakers. It offers you the opinion of an expert. As a group, criminals are venal, cheap, spineless parasites. Starting now, every good citizen should work toward an overhauling of the public psychology, a spreading of the realization that crime is a vile enterprise without a single redeeming feature, that any criminal anywhere is an enemy of every decent person and must be dealt with accordingly. Tonight's FBI file continues a few days later in the teletype room at the local FBI field office.
George, I hear something came in on Carter.
Oh, yes, Jim, from the police of Springfield, Maine.
Is he all the way back there?
No, but they want him.
Oh, what for?
Non-support of his wife and two children. He deserted them in 49.
And then I doubt that we'll find him in Springfield.
Probably not.
Oh, I've correlated all those employment records.
Oh, what's the story?
Well, Carter gets good ratings for workmanship, but he never holds a job very long.
Always whiskey?
Or making speeches during working hours.
Well, he's consistent. Did he ever use any other name?
No, not that we know of. Why?
Well, I was wondering if he might have bought a car under an alias.
No. Well, my guess is that he's traveling by thumb.
Oh? Well, how about distributing this picture to motels along the highway?
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Now, wait a minute.
Huh?
Jim, there's Carter's name.
Oh, yeah, I see. Riotel Ray Carter list stolen currency. Two of missing $20 bills appeared here today. Orange City Police.
Orange City?
Yeah.
Carter's still within reach.
Come on, George. Let's get up there.
The stolen $20 bills in Orange City had been passed in cheap saloons, but Carter had spent them and moved on. Then came other teletypes. Pineville, three stolen 20s. Again, the same pattern, cheap saloons and further flight. Rivercrest, four stolen 20s. Decatur, five stolen bills. Greenwood, three stolen bills. Then came a report from Washington.
George, we just got word from Washington on Carter. The San Remo police submitted his prints.
They pick him up on our alarm?
No, they arrested him for drunk and disorderly. I spoke to a detective up there named Shelby. He's checking their drunk tank for us now.
Where's that warrant for Carter?
Here, right here. Pardon me, George.
Sure, Jim.
Taylor speaking.
Harry Shelby at San Remo.
Well, you made a quick check. How's Carter?
He's been released.
Oh, no.
We missed him by an hour.
Well, thanks anyway.
You coming up here?
Yeah, on the next plane.
Pardon me, are you Agent Taylor?
No.
I am.
Oh, Harry Shelby. I'm the one who had you paid.
Oh, hello, Shelby. This is Agent Wilson here.
Shelby. How do you do?
Thanks for the nice weather.
Well, I'm afraid that's about all I've got to welcome you with. I don't know how to explain letting Carter get away,
but... There's no point in worrying about that now.
Carter was on a real spree here before we picked him up.
Oh?
He spent all the bills in cheap saloons?
Yeah. How'd you know?
Well, that's been his pattern.
Every one of the saloons was down on Skid Row. I got some old clothes that'll fit you two. I thought maybe the three of us could go down there.
Good idea.
Yeah. We can distribute lists of the serial numbers on the stolen money to the cashiers while we're at it.
Okay.
How many of the 20s have you found?
8 so far.
8?
Uh-huh.
There goes that lead.
Why? If Carter's here, he might pass a few more.
He can't. Those 8 were the last ones we had numbers on.
After changing clothes, Special Agents Taylor and Wilson joined Detective Harry Shelby in a tour of the local Skid Row, a street of cheap, poorly ventilated saloons, a few dirty hash houses, a dilapidated all-night movie, and more cheap saloons.
Carter passed one of the bills in that saloon.
Okay, let's drop in there, huh?
He spent all the money around here?
Yeah.
Well, he didn't care much about luxury.
Here. Go ahead, Taylor.
Oh, thanks, Ray.
I've got it.
There's an empty table.
Yeah, that's for us. Let's grab it, huh? Go ahead, Jordan. Well, I don't see him at the bar.
He's not at a table in this part of the room.
Hey, wait a minute.
You see him?
Oh, no, I thought I did.
We ought to drink a little toast.
Is somebody making a speech?
Yeah, in that group down at the end of the bar.
That could be him. Where till I see?
That's the trouble today. Not enough of us take the trouble to thank people for helping us. Now, let's just take this glass of whiskey here, for example.
No, it's not Carter.
What made you think it might be? You know his voice?
No, but he likes to make speeches.
He's a real soapbox artist.
Oh, well, then maybe we ought to look for him at Edgewood Park.
What's Edgewood Park?
It's not as high tone as it sounds. It's, oh, like Hyde Park in London. You know, an open-air spot where the soapbox orators can pop off.
Nice.
You need a license to speak at the park?
Nope, just strong lungs.
Come on, let's get over there. What a tribute this place is.
Tribute to what? Insanity?
No, no, not to the country. Except for Hyde Park in London, there's probably no place in the entire world where people can get up in public and say the things that we've heard tonight.
Well, you don't appreciate that so much when this is your beat.
This is a tough beat?
We get a riot call about once a week when the hecklers get out of hand and people start swinging.
We have a crowd around that platform.
Yeah, he usually has the best turnout.
Who is he?
Somebody called Rollo. Comes down every night and does a horoscope.
Huh? Who's?
Oh, he doesn't confine himself to people. He does one for the whole world.
Shelby, I think we ought to separate here. George can cover the people on the left, and I'll head down the middle of the crowd.
Okay, I'll take the right-hand side.
Fine.
We meet at the speaker's platform.
What? See you later.
We see.
Mickey Mouse.
Unfortunately, this is a public gathering place, and there is no way to keep certain people from joining our audience. I must ask you not to encourage that type with laughter. They'll always be among us, so long as it's possible to enter our group merely by walking down that path.
Where'd you come from, Cloud 7?
I shall proceed. Moving into the house of Jupiter, we see a square aspect to Uranus. That means a period of great uncertainty for the world. Mars and Neptune may be in conjunction, but that means discipline is required to avoid disaster.
Listening to you is a disaster.
I cannot continue with this constant series of rude interruptions.
You want me to come up and take over?
Good. George, come here.
Yeah, Jim.
You see that heckler?
No. Oh.
There he is, making his way toward the platform.
Yes, I see him.
Come on, we can make the platform just about the same time. Let's go.
Pardon
me, ma'am.
Excuse us, please. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Well, let us through, please.
Excuse us, please.
This is considered a time for contacts, new work, and greater ambitions.
It's also a time for you to quit.
Just a minute, Carter.
Oh, let go. I
We're special agents of the FBI.
Isn't that him, Taylor?
Yes, Shelby.
I got to go up there and make a speech.
Come on, Carter. You're under arrest.
Ray Carter was convicted in federal court and sentenced to a federal penitentiary. The arrest of Ray Carter was the result and an example of how an investigation is conducted. An example of the ingredients that go to make a trained professional law enforcement officer at work. Those qualities are training, experience, common sense, and last, but perhaps most important, hard work. It is not important to you, the citizen, that no file is ever closed without hard work. But it is important to you that no FBI file is ever closed without the apprehension of the criminal. For that is your guarantee from the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Your guarantee that no criminal will remain at freedom if he can possibly be caught. If working 24 hours a day around the clock will bring him to justice. Next week, we will dramatize another case from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Its subject, extortion. Its title, The Protection Peddlers. The incidents used in tonight's Equitable Life Assurance Society's broadcast are adapted from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of places or persons living or dead is accidental. Tonight, the music was composed and conducted by Frederick Steiner. The author was Jerry D. Lewis. Your narrator was William Woodson, and Special Agent Taylor was played by Stacey Harris. Others in the cast were Parley Bear, Betty Blythe, Herb Ellis, Peter Leeds, Stuffy Singer, Tom Tully, and Carlton Young. This is Your FBI, a Jerry Devine production, was directed by Sid Goodwin. This is Larry Keating speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community, and inviting you to tune in again next week at this same time when the Equitable Life Assurance Society will bring you another thrilling transcribed story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The Protection Peddlers on This Is Your FBI.
Well, that's it for this week, but we're back next week at the same time, same place, for more old-time radio here.